Welcome to Nothing to Fear, a weekly horror movie podcast. My name is Billy Schultz, and every week on the show, me and two of my friends watch a different horror movie and talk all about it. And those two friends are Alex Wan and Luke Mason. Alex, how are you doing this morning?
I'm tired. I'm sleepy. I can't think of another word to describe how I'm feeling, but I'm tired and sleepy, Billy.
Tired and sleepy. Okay. Yeah. You get up to anything?
I went bowling last night for a friend's birthday, and then we went for food and drinks, and I was the old person that was like, I'm going to go home now because I have things to do in the morning, such as record a podcast. So I wasn't even out late last night. Not even late, yeah. But here I am.
This is the kind of dedication we love to see at Nothing to Fear. So fans, Alex is really doing it for you. What about you, Luke? How are you doing?
I don't know. I mean, I'm totally fine, but I just feel like, you know, November is just so, so fucking pointless that I don't care. You know, like, this month is just the least important month of the year.
Yeah, we don't care for Remembrance Day here at Nothing to Fear, right?
Caveat aside, yeah, Remembrance Day is important, but even the holiday of this month is really somber and, like, not celebratory and... It's just dark early and cold, but not snowy, and you know.
Yeah, we don't even have a big dinner to look forward to like our friends in the States do, right?
So I'm just kind of like, let's just get through this goddamn month.
Just get to December.
Also, happy birthday, Joelle. Sorry
about
that.
Not one thing to celebrate or remark on.
Yeah, honestly, like... I get it. If you had a birthday in November, you'd probably feel different about it. But to me, November and February are just like months that exist to fill out the calendar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, why?
Right. That's fair. I mean, yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way about January. It's like post-holidays, you know, it's a slump. But I've always enjoyed January because that's when my birthday is. So there's like something to look forward to. For me personally, and
well,
that must be what our November birthday friends are like.
At least in January, yeah, you get one holiday right at the beginning, but then also it's kind of, you're not, I have noticed that I haven't been fatigued by winter yet in January. Mm-hmm. Like there's still lots of fun in, there's a lot of snow and you can do winter activities. I just find by February, mid to late February, I'm just over it.
Yeah, it's over it. That's fair. I myself, we have officially joined the ranks of snow this year. Last Wednesday, we had the first snowfall of the year, and it was like almost 10 centimeters fell overnight. So it was like crazy busy. I decided to take the day off school because I didn't want to drive. And my class on Wednesday usually ends at 8 p.m. So
8
taking PM? Public transit home. Yeah, 8 p.m. Taking public transit home is... a non-issue. I did it the first week and it took me like 2.5 hours to get home. And so I was like, fuck it. You know what? $6 for parking is worth it to save me 2 hours of time. But then it was snowy and I don't have my winter tires on yet. So I was just like, hey, I'm going to stay home. But the apartment building that I live in there was something going on with the power company that needed to shut off the power for like the entire apartment complex all day. So there was at 7 a.m. it was like lights off. You hear the fridge wind down. I was watching something on TV. I knew it was happening at 7. I was watching something on Disney Plus, and the first thing that went down was the subtitles. I was just like, why did the subtitles turn off? And then it was because there was no power, so the internet was off. And it just like subtitles went down first, and then slowly the picture started like freezing, and then eventually just gave me a little buffering.
It's like a real life version of Marty McFly seeing himself disappear in the picture.
Yeah, basically. So I got to, you know, spend a day. I went over to Kelly's parents' place because they still had power for a while and did some studying. But then like the afternoon I came home and just like sat in the quiet, and there was no like buzzing of lights or refrigerators or other power. And it was just like, it was oddly peaceful and quiet. And I kind of just took a moment to just be. So, but power came back, everything's all good. You know, it came back at 6 p.m which it had already been dark for 2.5 hours, and then it came back on, everyone was excited, and then it went down again because when they turned it on they broke something, and so we had to wait for like another 2 hours to get our power back. So it was a bit of an ordeal, but
hey, take the power back.
It's because I was fighting the power. That's what I did. I broke it. Let's talk about some horror movie news. What's going on in the horror movie newsiverse? I have collected 3 pieces of horror movie news and 1 piece of non-horror movie news. So what do you want first? A horror movie news or a non-horror movie news?
I want the second horror movie news first.
Okay. All right. All right. Ask and ye shall receive.
Thank you.
The second one is that there was a report. Hang on, I got it on my phone. I got tabs open on my internet. Okay, second one. Look at that. This is from theplaylist.net, and it is involving the, I guess, prequel movie to the Quiet Place universe with A Quiet Place Day One. And the news that broke this week was that Joseph Quinn was in talks to join Lupita Nyong'o in the cast.
Is it going to be like written and directed again by John Krasinski?
I got that answer. So we've got A Quiet Place Day One is the next installment in John Krasinski's Alien series, but it won't feature the Abbott family. Instead, it is being directed by Michael Sarnowski, who did 2020's Pig.
I love that movie. That was a great movie.
Yeah, so he did Pig. He directs a script based on an original concept by Krasinski, although the series creator didn't write it. So John Krasinski did not write this one. It's kind of a different part of the alien invasion with Lupita Nyong'o and Joseph Quinn, who listeners may recall from Stranger Things. He was Eddie Munson. Mm-hmm. What are our thoughts on that? We are pretty positive on the Quiet Place-averse. What do we think about this casting news?
Didn't we already watch that movie, though? Like, we saw Day One in Quiet Place Part 2.
Yeah.
Well, part of it.
That's what I saw, yeah. Yeah, my hope is that they go somewhere else, and it's like, what if it's not a small town with a bunch of woods you can escape to? What if it's, like, the middle of a city, or, I don't know, an arcade or something, where it's just a lot of noise all the time?
What if they're clowns, and they have to, you know, they got, like, bells on their shoe?
Oh, my God. It's like a clowning troupe?
They'd be dead. I don't know.
But maybe just like the radio, the bell frequency is so high that it kills the aliens.
Mm. Or it's like a quiet place, Santa's workshop, and there's just sleigh bells everywhere.
Do bells ring at a high frequency?
No, they don't, Luke.
I don't know if they do.
It's just a joke. It's just a joke, Luke. Yeah.
But I think that they ring at a high decibel.
I'll trust that joke was funny. Your internet cut out a little bit at the punchline, so that's why you're not receiving a raucous laugh now.
No, I think you should trust that it's not funny.
Okay. All right. Okay, well then, next piece of news. I'm going to close this tab. Okay, this one is the non-horror. No, I'll save the non-horror one till the end. This story I have comes from IGN, so video game website, really good. But that apparently is that Fede Alvarez is directing a new Alien movie, and he found a cast member in the name of Kaylee Spaney. So I didn't know that Fede Alvarez was working on an Alien movie, but apparently Ridley Scott is giving it the thumbs up. So what do we think about a new Alien movie coming in to play?
I don't care. Yeah.
You don't care about Alien? No.
I also, like, I'm just tired of all these, like, reboots, remakes, sequels.
Yeah.
Just make something original for once.
That's fair. Yeah. What about the director? We knew Fede Alvarez from, he directed Don't Breathe, and I guess Don't Breathe 2, but we didn't watch Don't Breathe 2. So, you know, with him behind it, what do we think of that? Still just like whatever?
Yes.
If it's good, I'll be happy. Mm-hmm. And if it's bad, I won't be disappointed.
What did you think of the like Prometheus-averse with like David the android and that sort of side of the Alien franchise? Did you like those when they came out?
I liked the characters that they introduced in those movies, and I thought the casting was really good. So like Michael Fassbender, and then in Prometheus, Charlize Theron and Noomi Rapace, they were great. And then they're just not in the next one because they're dead. And I was like, well, why? Okay. You just like took the best part of your movie and said, let's not put it in the next one.
But they had 2 Michael Fassbenders.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a big budget film that looked great and Alien Covenant was entertaining, and I thought Danny McBride was actually a surprise standout in it. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, ultimately, it's a story of either a wild animal that can kill you easily, which is also like something we've seen in a lot of other movies,
mm-hmm.
or it's an AI that's surreptitious and trying to harm you, and you don't know how to deal with it, which I think we've seen done better in other recent movies, like Ex Machina or something like that. Right. So, I don't know. It's like, what new thing can they throw at us from the Alien franchise other than saying, here's another movie from the Alien franchise? You know, it's so different from when you see the original.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, there's no recapturing the creative genius behind the first of something almost ever.
Yeah, that's
so,
true.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, there's the other aspect of like, this giant corporation is actually sinister. Big shock there, you know,
yeah.
because
yeah,
they're always up to something with the aliens, and it's like there's enough giant corporations being sinister in the real life that I don't need to like go to the movies to find it. So
mm-hmm. I'll probably watch it at some point, but like I have found mm-hmm. myself in the last, like maybe COVID had a part to do with this too, but I just have found myself not really caring to go see movies when they come out. You know what I mean? Like movies yeah. that I might otherwise mm-hmm. have gone to the theater to see. I can't be bothered to do it anymore.
What's the last movie you saw in theaters?
Honestly, I think it was Five Cream.
Wow.
I think I went and saw it. Now, part of it is also Nelson doesn't have a very thriving, like there's one theater sure. and the movies that come out are usually like a few weeks after. So
right.
I go to Castlegar if I really want to see a movie in theaters. I don't know. Right. It's just—it's
not like you have a giant Cineplex
and the,
there.
And the access to movies now at home is just so much bigger and easier
mm-hmm.
and cheaper. So, and maybe part of the mid-size elephant in the room of all of this is that Hollywood just doesn't really make that many good movies anymore. They're all comic book movies, or they're all remakes or reboots or sequels. Like, there's just no gambling, it feels like, anymore on an original idea. Mm-hmm. So that when those movies do come around, like maybe a good example of this, I'm recording Full Spectrum Cinema later today, and we're doing the movie Seven Psychopaths by Martin McDonagh. Now, mm-hmm. there are like, that is the kind of movie that Hollywood never makes unless you're a filmmaker that basically can say to Hollywood, fuck you, I can do whatever I want, so give me the money for it, and they will mm-hmm. do it, you know? Like, so like a movie like Seven Psychopaths or In Bruges, which so they stand out so much from.
He's got a new one coming out, right? Banshees of Ed Sheeran.
It is, yeah.
Banshees of Insurin. Yeah.
Ed Sheeran.
So, Insurin. Yeah. yeah. With Ed Colin Sheeran. Farrell and Brendan Gleeson again, who are the In Bruges twosome. And so, you know, it's like, do I want every movie to be kind of like that? Yeah, I do. I do. I don't give a shit anymore about, like, and I, you know, I've enjoyed the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but I just don't give a shit about it anymore because it's so implausible. And I've seen all of these movies already. So I would way rather Fede Alvarez write and direct a movie totally original mm-hmm. than do Alien, whatever is next. That would be my choice.
Okay. Okay. I mean, that's totally fair. And I get that. Like, I mean, the Marvel burnout is real for me. Like, yeah, I don't know. I think that I like kind of what Fede Alvarez is doing, and I hope that he can take something out of the Alien franchise to make it interesting and like play in that sandbox that's more of this sort of survival, people using their wits to outsmart a being that's way better than them. And yeah, I mean, we've seen that story a million times, but you know, we've seen every story a million times because every story has been told, and like it's the creativeness and the plotting and unfolding those plot elements that I think can be good. And I don't know, I just hope he gets a chance to play around, and as long as there's no like semen in a turkey baster in this Alien movie, I think I'll be okay with it. Maybe this next piece of horror movie news will
make us based
make you feel a little bit better. Basic. We'll see. We'll see. It's a merger. This is from Vanity Fair and news broke this week that Jason Blum of Blumhouse and James Wan, we know James Wan, are in talks of merging their two companies, Blumhouse and Atomic Monster, together to make some new sort of Blumhousey horror movies. So I don't know. Maybe that's a positive sign that we'll get some more money thrown at original ideas and get those movies onto screens. What do you think about that?
I'm so indifferent. I think really what's making me feel about like not really caring about any of this is probably the fact that I still like, I don't like / care for horror movies as much. Like even after doing this for 2 years, like there's nothing about a horror movie that excites me. That's like, ooh, I want to see that. Or ooh, like let's go. Or love doing this podcast. I don't think horror movies still quite tickle that fancy of mine that gets me excited for things, you know?
Okay.
I am optimistic that that merger will produce good art.
All right.
Not just Mystic. I'm optimistic on that.
You're optimistic. Okay. Well, I guess we'll see. It should. They've got M3gin coming out in the new year. So maybe that'll
M3gin. Be a good.
Yeah, Megan. The killer doll movie.
Oh, I thought that was about an AI.
Yeah, she's like an AI and a doll. Oh, okay. It's like a friend doll.
Yeah, what's the difference between an AI and a doll? You know, like, where do you draw that line?
I guess an AI can be like, you know, your Alexa or your Siri. But if it has like a body to move around in, that makes it a doll.
I guess.
But what if it's an AI with a doll's body? Is that just a robot then?
Yeah. We'll ask Oscar Isaac. And
when does a doll become a robot?
Yeah, I don't know. When you give it 6 million forms of communication.
Yes. Over 6 million.
Over 6 million. Pardon me. Okay, well, let's move on. I've got, one last piece of non-horror news I did want to say, but I just wanted to briefly touch on, speaking of comic book movies, we had a big loss in the industry recently. Kevin Conroy, who did the voice of Batman and like a lot of the animated stuff, he passed away quite suddenly. And I just wanted to mention it because I've always been a kind of medium fan of Batman, and I really liked Kevin Conroy's work that he did in the animated series. I watched it a little bit when I was a kid, and it's sad to see someone go at like a young age. He's only 66. But do either of you fans of the animated Batman work?
I think he is Batman for me. Mm-hmm. I think Batman. Like, I don't really think of the actors first. I think of his voice. Just like, you know, when I think of Joker. Maybe I do think of Heath Ledger first, but I do definitely think of Mark Hamill a lot as well. So they're pretty iconic voices, and you know, it's stuff that I actually grew up with and I watched a lot as a kid.
Yeah,
it was kind of shocking news.
Yeah, I mean, the 90s animated Batman was great, but all those animated shows from the 90s were like so good.
They were really good. Yeah.
Sad.
Yes. Well, thanks for doing a good voice of Batman, Kevin Conroy. Okay. Should we talk about a horror movie?
Yeah, let's do that.
We're all here to wrap up the Annabelle franchise. And yeah, this was my pick. I went in with low expectations. I didn't really know much about it, aside from the fact that apparently this doll had a big piece to do with it. And based on my reaction, my positive reaction to number one and my lukewarm reaction to number two, I found myself enjoying this one more than I thought I would. But we'll talk about Annabelle Comes Home soon after the trailer. But Alex, what did you know anything about this one before you saw it?
I mean, I know Annabelle is in it, but
sure.
Yeah, I knew that like Ed and Lorraine Warren were going to be in it. So,
see, I didn't know that. That was a big surprise for me.
Vera Farmiga and Josh Wilson, Patrick Wilson. yeah, so I knew they were in it. So I think I was like a little bit more looking forward to watching this doll movie than the other ones, but I had tempered my expectations because so far Annabelle has done jack shit. And I was like, I guess we'll see if Annabelle does anything in this one. But yeah, that's all I knew about it.
She's so evil. She's so evil. Luke, did you know about Annabelle Comes Home before you watched it, aside from just word of mouth?
No, no details, just broad strokes, doll. I assumed by the title it was like either going to be about the original family from the second movie or the home that it was at now. And that's what it was.
That's what it was.
That's what it was.
I for a hot second thought it was going to be an expansion of the story with like Annabelle at the nursing student's house. I thought that was going to be what we see. We see that piece of the storyline, but I don't know. Maybe they'll go like, you know, maybe the Annabelle Cinematic Universe will just start to fill in day by day. Like, it seems like they're really trying to make us know every single day that happens in the Star Wars universe between, you know, Order 66 and the attack on Yavin, because they keep putting series out that are in that like 20-year span.
Do you think, so. I have a feeling, you can cut this out from the episode because it's an Andor and maybe a spoiler, but I have a feeling...
Wait, Alex hasn't seen Andor yet.
Just saying.
Oh, okay. All right.
I have a feeling that Imperial Officer is going to turn to the Rebellion. I have a feeling there's a few more Imperial people who are going to have some big turns. And I think that's one of the best themes of Andor, is how they're showing how all sorts of different people... It's funny, you have a Tolstoy reference, and Tolstoy said like something like, all families are happy in the same way, and all unhappy families are unhappy in their own way. And there's kind of like, all of the people who hate the Empire hate it for a slightly different reason, you know? And that's been one of the most interesting themes of the show, I think.
Are you talking about Cyril or the lady?
I think the lady's gonna... Yeah. She's too smart to be... Like, she's not arrogant enough to be an Imperial officer, you know? She's too, like, aware of what the enemy might do. And that kind of pragmatic... She's not an ideologue enough to be a true Imperial officer, I think. So I think she's going to turn.
Well, we'll see. I guess by the time this comes out, I think the series will have ended by the time this episode comes out.
But don't you think that's, like, the coolest part about it is how... all of the people have a different reason for hating the Empire. I love that theme of it.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. But anyway, we're already off topic.
Honestly, can we just talk about Andor series for this episode?
Yeah, holy shit.
I'm just
Patreon
kidding.
Bonus content. No, we're going to talk about Annabelle Comes Home, the 2019 movie, and we'll be back after the trailer. I forgot I was going to do the Does the Dog Die trigger warnings.
Then put it before that.
Okay, yeah. So according to Does the Dog Die, there are dead animal, brackets chicken. There's an asthma attack, torture. The loss of a parent is a significant plot point. There are jump scares, of course. Possession, ghosts, and our favorites, vomit and blood. Great. Perfect. Seamless editing. All right. Check out those, and I'll always go to that site if you want to know what else is up there that we might have missed. But here comes the trailer, and we'll be right back.
What's this?
You folks need to turn around. Pretty bad accident up ahead.
Anything we can do?
You a doctor or something?
Or something.
Nice doll.
That's what you think. Did it work?
The evil is contained.
How could you not tell me you're babysitting for the Warrens tonight?
Mwah. And we'll be back early tomorrow morning.
Have fun. Don't your parents keep any creepy stuff around?
We keep it all locked away in a room. It's not good for anyone to go in there.
My dad says that everything in there is either haunted, cursed, or used in some ritualistic practice.
What's that?
Yeah, okay, all right.
It's all you. It's all you, buddy.
Okay, this one I gotta splice up a couple. All right.
Here we go.
Annabelle Comes Home is a 2019 American supernatural horror film written and directed by Gary Dauberman. It serves as a sequel to 2014's Annabelle and 2017's Annabelle Creation as the seventh installment in the Conjuring Universe franchise. The film stars McKenna Grace, Madison Eisman, and Katie Sarif, along with Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson, who reprised their roles as Ed and Lorraine Warren. While babysitting the daughter of Ed and Lorraine Warren, a teenager and her friend unknowingly awaken an evil spirit trapped in a doll. I have issues with that synopsis. It's not a teenager and her friend. It's her shitbag friend. That's it.
Her shitbag
friend who was
in pain.
She was real sad. Yeah, she was in pain.
I don't give a shit. Okay, people that like do stuff like that have zero respect or like disregard anybody's like personal property, rules, privacy, any of that, I despise. Like, how fucking big is your ego that you can just do that?
Yeah.
It's absurd to me. Okay, sorry.
A big swing. It's a big swing for Daniela in this movie. We'll get into it for sure. Just a little bit of trivia for those who care. The budget of this movie was somewhere between 27 and 32 million. That's the precise as I could get on after one Google. And it made at the box office a total of $231 million. So again, this movie brought in the money. People seem to want to go see this Annabelle movie, and here we go. It's got a 64% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 5.9 on IMDb, which is kind of like average for an average horror movie. So yes, this was my pick to finish off the Annabelle
month. I mean, creepy doll.
creepy Annabelle month. I mean, whatever. So, Luke, you get to bring it home next week.
How many creepy doll movies are left? You know what? Fuck you, Alex. I'm gonna pick Saw 3.
We could have watched
Boys Don't Fight.
Child's
the boy.
Child's Play 2, right?
Child's Play. There's like Puppet Master.
Bride of Chucky. The Seed of Chucky.
I would watch this movie again. Over that.
Hey. All right. So yes, the Annabelle movies have been wildly enjoyed sporadically at different
just like
amounts.
Hating the Empire, right? For different reasons.
Yes.
Yeah.
Different reasons.
Everyone hates the Empire for different reasons. My first impressions of this one, I think I like this one second most out of the three, which is not a high bar to clear, I will grant, but it didn't make me as like annoyed as Annabelle Creation, and I didn't know that the Warrens were in it at the start, so it was kind of like, oh, hey, I know these people. This is kind of a cool, familiar thing and a familiar setting. And I was mentioning this to Luke off air before you hopped on the call, Alex, that this movie, if you take it as less of a horror movie and more of a crazy high school party one night movie, that, you know, this movie kind of fits into that mold pretty well. If you take it instead of, you know, oh, I invited one person over to a house party and then they brought all their friends. It's like, I invited Danielle over and then she invited a bunch of demons. And then we had like hijinks. And this movie was full of hijinks. And I thought it was enjoyable. I had a good time with it. So I can't wait to talk about it. I do have a question for both of you after you give me your initial impressions. So get ready for that. But Alex, what did you think of Annabelle Comes Home? What did you hate about this movie?
I hated Daniela, but other than that, I didn't really, I don't think I really hated anything about this movie. I think I feel more about like how Luke felt about last week with Annabelle Creation. Like, just like, it's just such a predictable horror movie that like, it's well made, but it's just that nothing about it was particularly enjoyable or unenjoyable. It was just like, it's another thing that I'll watch, be like, oh, there was like a couple things that were mildly frightening, and now I'm going to completely forget about it in the next couple days.
Right.
There's nothing outstanding about it, but nothing instanding about it either. Is that the opposite? Yeah. Like, I didn't viscerally dislike this movie, but I didn't care for it either. It was just another little blip in my brain that I'm going to completely forget about in a couple days.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. And so, Luke, not a fan. Not a fan of Annabelle. What was your first impression?
Annabelle.
Well, honestly, my big challenge today is to figure out how to talk about this movie in any way different than I talked about Annabelle Creation, because it's like the exact same movie.
Fair, fair, fair.
There's nothing wrong with this film. It's totally, totally serviceable, but it's 100% predictable. If I've seen this kind of movie 100 times last week, I've now seen it 101 times, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm not usually bereft of unique things to say about something. Don't have.
Okay. Thank you.
But, like, I'm trying to remember what I said last week. Like, every scare was outlined. Everything was so predictable. The shots were cool. The acting was okay. Like,
yeah.
You honestly could just take my audio from last week and put it on this one. Because it's almost it's almost the same movie, not even just thematically, but like
okay
as it's going. So, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's two slightly different, I guess, things. Is one of them is I just, the breathtaking negligence of the Warrens in this movie is incomprehensible to me, given what they know about what's in their house. That they would leave their 10-year-old daughter with a babysitter in what is like the supernatural equivalent of fucking Chernobyl. And they're just like, yeah, it'll be fine. Like, fucking...
We'll see you tomorrow morning, Penny. Bye.
I can't even comprehend how... the supernatural, like, social services need to get that girl out of there ASAP. Like, that is just... How is she not dead already? And then the other thing that I thought was kind of funny, and part of it's funny is because I know you don't really want me to say this, Billy, but this was basically an Annabelle gangbang, this movie, you know? Like, in the first two movies, there's, like, one demon using her as a conduit. Now everyone's using her as a conduit. Annabelle is just putting it out left, right, and center for all the demons today in this movie, and just good for her.
Yeah.
You know, she's growing
it's okay.
up.
It's okay, Billy. This doll is dozens of years old by this point, yeah. right?
Good, yeah.
Yeah.
Look, as long as everybody is infernally consenting, have fun.
So,
yeah.
I mean, like, yeah. McKenna Grace did great. The other actresses were pretty young women, so it's easy to watch them on screen. You know, like, the Bob was cute and funny. But, like...
Bob's got balls.
But, like, this is, like... It's not even just not revolutionary. It's, like, anti-revolutionary mm-hmm. in the horror genre. You know?
Yes.
So...
It's very by the numbers. Again, it's one of those things where it's, like, if you don't watch a horror movie every week, maybe you, like, enjoy this a bit more. But if you know the beats and you know the architecture of a horror movie, then you're like, well, you're just making that again. You're just playing that same song. So
I guess I'm just saying to a listener, if you listen to last week's episode and this week's back to back, I apologize for how exactly the same my thoughts are, but I blame the movies.
All right. All right. Okay. Well, I did say I had a question. I have a couple questions for both of you to think over. And so now that we've seen all three of the current Annabelle movies, we've witnessed different efforts to contain this evil, and all of them ultimately not working in the end. So the challenge this week to think about is build a better Annabelle cage. And how do you go about making the best Annabelle cage? Because the Warrens, you know, we saw them, they had that sweet box that they had in the first one. Turns out it was just in their room already. They're like, eh, sweet. It's from a chapel. We got it. So, you know, we're the experts now. How do we make a better Annabelle? Not Annabelle. Annabelle Cage.
I think what the Warrens had worked. Just don't let fucking idiots into your house.
It's human error. You're saying the system is fine. It's human error that yeah. is to blame?
Why would you even okay. leave your keys there?
Right?
Like, I just... For demon hunters, or whatever their title is... The blind spot was too much. It was just too much for me.
We put it behind one picture of Jesus. That's safe enough.
Why don't you just keep the keys with you all the time?
Just put your keys in your pocket, Ed.
Yeah.
Why not get like the bulletproof Pope Mobile glass? So it's like you can't break it either.
Oh. Okay, there you go.
But it doesn't fucking matter because
no.
The whether or not these demons are withheld mm-hmm. by churchy things or not is 110% contingent on what the plot needs it to be, not on any logic
yeah.
inherent in the churchy things. It doesn't fucking matter, Billy.
The opening scene where they're talking to those nurses and like, we're going to take this doll with us. And they're like, why don't you just destroy it? And then Ed goes, that would be even worse for you. I was like, isn't that fucking convenient, Ed? You can't just destroy the doll. It'll be just worse.
Yeah,
why?
There's
how?
There's one scene what? In this movie where Judy's holding up a crucifix and that stops the demon. But how many times have we seen that crucifix get blown out of someone's hand and the demon's like, well, I don't give a fuck about your crucifix. It's like, well, movie.
You don't have the heart of a Judy. Yeah.
These movies are, you know, these movies have their mouth on their own genitals the whole time.
They do. Yeah, they do. I like that thing you mentioned, Alex, with Ed's line where it's like, well, we can't destroy it. It would be bad. Okay, Like, they're moving on. And it felt like, I don't know, it felt, especially for, you know, us as podcasters, where we're like, well, why does this work? Why can't you just destroy it? Why can't you destroy it? That they're like, okay, the fans are asking, why don't they just destroy Annabelle? So what if we tell them not to worry about it?
We can't.
Episode, oh, good job, we did it. So it's like, yeah, it's not worth arguing about because you just can't for reasons. You know, again, we dig up the old specter of because demons.
Why don't we try some Protestant mythology, not Catholic? That's been fucking
boring. Yeah. You know, like in the Mummy from in 1999's The Mummy, there was that one character who he wore like a million different necklaces, each with a different like religious iconography, just to cover his bases. Like, yeah. Okay, you papered it through, you papered that closet with Bible verses. Why not get some Torah in there? Why not chuck a couple pages of the Quran up there? Like, you know, the Vedic texts, plaster those on there. Like, I'm sorry if I'm being sacrilegious about this, but apparently, well, like, ripping up a Bible is
this
fine.
Movie so would, like, have a whole different problem if it started ripping up pages of the Quran and putting it up on there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, yes. I don't mean to impinge, and I sincerely don't mean to, like, impinge on anybody's religion, but it is very funny that
you couldn't, and
we
also could, like,
we could put a full intact Quran in there.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like why? Yeah, you're like, it's like, why is it Christianity that seems to be the way to stop this? Which, by the way, also doesn't ever keep it fully contained, because you're right. The demons are sometimes like, oh no, a crucifix, and sometimes they're like, haha, lowercase T. I don't care about it. Get out of here. And so it's like
lowercase T for time to
time
leave.
Time to leave.
Yeah. Where'd you get that necklace? It's a cross. A cross from where?
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, just yeah. Like...
So, human error is the problem, and it's okay. The Warren's problem. Like, they
but it's
had
inexcusable
this...
human error. Yeah. This is an inexcusable amount of human error, because it's like Tiger Woods forgetting his golf clubs. Or it's like, I don't know, Schumacher forgetting his car or something like that. Like, this is the thing that you're known for.
It's Obi-Wan forgetting his lightsaber.
Exactly. Like, it's just, it's you're fired. I'm firing them from being parents if this is what they're going to do, because this is just too much.
Well, you know? Especially, yeah, like the Warrens,
you
just
put your kid
absolutely
in danger.
D-class parents, not winning Parent of the Year award. Why can't you just have Mary Ellen have her over at her house? Mary Ellen doesn't have a house she can go to?
Or she's 10. Take her with you for one night. Like,
it's even scarier. She can't just stay in a hotel. Yeah, the Warrens, substandard parenting. 0 out of 10. Definitely for me.
They know what's in their house. They fucking know every little detail about everything in that room. And they're just like, well, it's probably worth the risk. It's like, fucking,
we gotta do it.
Maybe that, you know what? The only thing that makes sense is that they hate Judy. That's it. That's the only thing that makes sense. Is that they actually just hate their daughter. And this is like, they're kind of like, oh no, she got by Annabelle. What a bummer.
Oh no.
You can't just straight up kill your kid. But like, if you know, leave him. But that doesn't add up, because Judy's a total sweetheart. So fuck you, Ed. Fuck you, Lorraine.
She is a sweetheart. I want to talk about McKenna Grace a little bit. She's been in a bunch of horror stuff. You know, I've seen her in a couple Mike Flanagan movies and shows. And she was, I think most recently, she was in the latest Ghostbusters, because she's a bit older than, you know, she's more.
Was she
early
in any other
now.
Movies we've done? I feel like I recognize her.
I think she has to have.
No, she was.
She
not.
Has to have.
No.
No. What's her IMDb, Alex? You seem like you got it.
Goodbye World, Suburban Gothic, Russell Madness, Frankenstein, Mr. Church, The Angry Birds Movie, Independence Day Resurgence, Gifted, How to Be a Latin Lover, Amityville, The Awakening.
It was Gifted. I remember seeing the trailers for that movie, because I think that's with Chris Evans, right? So
yes,
I recognize her from those trailers, I'd say.
Wait, wasn't she in Ghostbusters Afterlife?
She was, but we haven't done that. Oh, she was in Malignant. She was in a movie we did.
Oh, Malignant. Yeah.
She was young Maddie Sin.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
There we
okay.
go. You were so confident, Alex.
Well, I was confident in the first two-thirds of this list, and then we got to 2021, and it was like, oh, damn, there she is.
Oh, damn.
There it is. Yeah, so, yeah, she plays Judy so well. I think she captures the, like, what it would be like to be that, like, have Ed and Lorraine as those parents. And again, this is the movie Ed and Lorraine, because I don't know anything about what the actual people Ed and Lorraine were like, but
weren't
just like
kind of shitty.
I think so. But like the ostracization from, you know, her peers at school, the fact that she's like, you know, weird and like talks about dead people all the time, and she's like straight up Sixth Sense in this movie, you know, as well. She has the sight or whatever. Just like, you really felt bad for her. I felt bad for her the whole time, especially they have very by the book scenes of kids being cruel to kids and being like, oh, you are the ghost girl, nobody likes you, I'm not coming to your birthday party. And then, like, you know, she goes through this harrowing experience and it's all scary. And wouldn't you know, lo and behold, at the end, everyone comes to her birthday party after all, because, you know, she, goddamn it, she deserves it. And I don't know. I know it's Hollywood. I know it's like silly storytelling, but like it made me feel good at the end where I was like, ah, she gets to have like a normal childhood. She's still in this fucked up house with like,
actually, no, she doesn't. Because
thing.
As we remember from Conjuring 2,
it's true.
She gets like, doesn't she get like, there's like a storyline with her specifically while her parents are in England or something?
Or there's stuff with Judy at their house in Conjuring 3, but I don't think it's the same actor who plays Judy. I think it's an older girl because she's at home.
Is the happenings of this movie, Annabelle Comes Home, supposed to be before the first Conjuring movie?
Yes.
Or
no?
Or after the first, before the second?
It's, I think, between the first two, because there is, in that room of horror, there's that little twisty box with the spinny spiral mirror that they only got from the first Conjuring.
So it's between Conjuring 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Got it.
Mm-hmm. It's between those two, and, you know, it's a great setup for the Warren Artifact cinematic universe, where you could just, as I was watching, anytime a movie came up, or any, not a movie, anytime a artifact came up, I was like, ooh, what's this going to be? The Ferryman coming 2026. Black Shuck, the demon dog werewolf, that's, you know, going to come out in 2027.
Here's what they got to do. They got to do a Cabin in the Woods Conjuring crossover film. Where the twist of the cabin is that it's actually the Warren's basement is where the movie was the whole time, because all that shit is exactly what Cabin in the Woods was. It's like, are they going to be zombies? Are they going to pick this one? Are they going to pick this one?
Ooh, what's this? Ooh, a bunch of coins. Oh, she's got a cursed bracelet. There's a suit of samurai armor. What's that about? Who knows?
I think just to, like, with Judy, she was definitely the best part of the movie for me. She was sweet and scared and... Yeah, you feel bad for her the whole time, and the McKenna Grace did a great job of portraying those emotions. But at this stage in our podcast run, when you think about what's happening, you're just like, fuck off, movie. Like, yes.
I think you said that in, like, episode 5.
I feel, like, natural, human, and even kind of, like, parental type of emotion for Judy. But the plot and the scares are so contrived in this that I lose that feeling very quickly whenever she's not on the screen, you know?
Right.
So she did her best, and it was really good. But
she did her best.
Can't save the movie.
She faced down the black demon. The only thing that I didn't get answered about her character was the fact that throughout the movie, she's seeing this specter of this, I guess, this Father Morrissey, who looks like he's died, and he's just, like, standing in the schoolyard and, like, looking at her, and she's like, okay, that's weird.
Very like It that. Follows-y.
Yeah, very It Follows.
It just shows that she inherited Lorraine's
powers,
right? And that she can she's been seeing dead people her whole life. And
but then, and maybe you can answer this question for me, but, like, it's supposed to be very creepy. You feel bad for her. She's seeing these dead people. Like, oh, that sucks for you, kid. But then she's like, at one point, she just, like, goes and follows him. He goes down some stairs. And I think Mary Ellen is like, where are you going? And she just is like, well, not all ghosts are bad. And then off she goes. And then nothing else comes of it. So I was just like, oh.
Well, doesn't she find something down there that she needs to help?
She finds the doll. They have to find the doll to put back in the case. And the father leads her to the doll.
Okay, okay. Still, big swing.
Yeah, I
big
mean,
swing
it was,
from
yeah,
Judy.
But he's like the what is he like the founding father of that school or something? Because there's like a bust of his.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. At first I thought, like, is he supposed to be from a different movie that we know? But no, he was just some dead dude that she sees. Maybe that's what I saw on the street. Just some dead lady waiting for a bus or something.
Waiting for the ferryman to.
Waiting for the ferryman. Yeah. I want to talk about the different spooks inspectors of this movie because it really did feel like a grab bag. A feely mealy of. Demon,
is that a real game?
Demonic horse. I don't know if it's a real game, but for some reason, it really tickled me that I got what I wanted from a speeding truck scene in a movie, in a horror movie, was an explanation from the driver. And even though it wasn't a good one, she like pushes him out of the way on the road. The demons are going. There's a truck that speeds by and crashes, and the driver gets out and he's like, oh, it just seized up. I lost control of it. And you're just like, ah, there we go. Got a
reason. But it also makes you say, well, if the demons can make the truck seize up, why can't they stop Ed from moving off the road? Why are their powers limited to the mechanical side of things? Right? I'm going deep in on why these demons.
They should have been able to, right?
Yeah. Because
they were the ones that pushed him in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. My traditional mid-recording poop has to happen now, so...
Okay, you know what? Okay. I might as well do mine then too.
I'll
take a little pause.
I'm gonna go get some cool air. Okay, I'll be back. Oh, it's Alex. Your mic, your camera's off. Your camera was off.
I realized I didn't mute my mic. So you might get some flushing noises.
That's okay. I couldn't see, like, your camera was off, but Luke's was still on. And so when I heard noises, I thought it was like doors in Luke's house moving around and clanging around. And I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Well, it probably was just mine.
Just me. Too.
Just Alex. Okay, we're all back on my little break.
I feel much better.
Good. I discussed what we're going to have for supper tonight. And it's very, Luke, you'll appreciate this. It's very like Red Wallian in terms of feast.
Oh, are you we're having doing... vittles?
We're having some vittles. Now we're going to do...
cordial. Jinx, you owe me a cordial.
Get some cordial. We're going to do a mushroom stew.
Summer berry pie?
No summer berry pie, unfortunately, but spaghetti squash, grilled pancake type things, and mushroom stew. So it's going to be good.
What are the baby and children animals called again? Because their eyes are always wide when they see these. What were they called? The
Littlins? Chillins?
No, the Vorpals?
There's like an actual word that they use in Redwall for the kids. I can't remember that.
Yeah.
Anyway. Their mouths would be watering at this point.
Oh, yeah. I always remember the...
Dibbins! That's it. Nibbins. Dibbins. Yeah, they called them Dibbins. The Dibbins are going to love this meal. You know what's funny? Okay, well, we're talking about Redwall now. So my...
This isn't a horror movie podcast anymore. We're just talking about Redwall.
When I was in Calgary, I hung out with my family a bunch, and my cousin Maria, her husband Chris... I guess he's like maybe 8 or 9 from a previous relationship. He has a son. And so we were talking about Redwall and how David, my cousin's first email was like davidofredwall@hotmail.com kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
And so he sent me a picture a few days after I got back to BC of the one Redwall book that they found at the library to read together. And it was The Legend of Luke. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Luke was Martin's dad, right?
Yeah.
Who was Martin's mom?
Was Luke an otter in the Redwall?
No, a mouse.
Luke was a mouse.
The cover had an otter on it, though.
Well, yeah. Martin was the chosen one, so he actually didn't have a mother. he was immaculately conceived through Luke.
Yeah, Luke just sprayed it out there.
Yeah, he just sprayed it on the forest, and Martin grew out.
That's positively aggression in terms of origin stories, like Greek myth style.
Yeah.
Zeus just being like, I don't know, babies, I guess, and then
seed here, seed there, seed every fucking where. Nice. All right, Annabelle 3, let's go.
Something else came home, huh?
Oh my gosh. Well, maybe this isn't a...
It's not called The Legend of Luke for nothing, let me tell you.
All right, we're back. How much of that made it in? Who knows? Maybe it was just 10 minutes of the intro or the hold music that I found that I put in. Okay, so like I said, part of what really charmed me about this movie was actually how much it played as like a high school party movie. And I don't know, maybe that's not an insightful notice of mine, but like it struck me very like super strongly.
It was Scream-esque.
It was Scream-esque, but it was also like super bad. Like, you know, it's just like, oh, we have people over. Yes, Danielle, you can come over, but don't like do anything. And it's just like, you know, if you invite people to a house party and then they invite a friend and then shit starts breaking and then someone's like running around and hiding and zany things are happening. But in this movie, it was like five or six demons.
Yeah, how many were there? Obviously, there was Annabelle, but Annabelle is the black demon. So that's
the black demon.
That's one. There's the fairy man with the coin eyes, and they just kept chucking coins at Mary Ellen, which I thought was wildly inappropriate.
It's true. At least use bills.
Yeah, come on.
But there were like multiple of them, but do we count them all as one?
No, they're all different. I think they're all different spirits. So there was the black demon. There was the ferryman. There was the Black Shook, which was like the werewolf that was hassling Bob outside. Mm-hmm. There was the bride, the violent wedding dress. And then there was, I guess, a couple minor ones were
there's
like
the suit of armor, maybe?
The suit of armor. And then like the little like squeezy box monkey. I don't know if he was its own spirit or if it, someone else was just
fooling
around with it.
Yeah, and I guess maybe it wasn't as much of a gangbang as I thought, because were those demons manifesting through their own little things in that room, or was it all through Annabelle? Like the movie didn't make it clear, right?
It just it feels like Annabelle somehow is like
a conduit for
portal. Yeah,
yeah. Well, because like they kind of allude to this when Ed's fixing the car outside the cemetery, and Lorraine's like the doll just pulls spirits towards it. So I guess
it's like a spirit magnet.
It was a gangbang.
Yeah, so every kind of artifact in the room was manifested extra strong because it was getting drawn by the doll, which was possessed by the black demon.
I mean, maybe Annabelle could have been created by Professor E. Gadd. That's a very niche Luigi's Mansion reference. He invented the poltergeist, which was the vacuum cleaner that you could suck up ghosts with. Anyway, follow me for more Luigi's Mansion. Anyway,
Charlie Day's mansion.
Annabelle's Charlie Day's mansion. That's a good one. So yeah, Annabelle's is spirit vacuum or a spirit magnet, where just like spirits come towards her, which is maybe why the priest, even though he was a good spirit, maybe that's why he was like walking towards Annabelle, because she was magnetizing him that way. And so because in the graveyard, Lorraine sees just all the ghosts in the cemetery, and they're mostly just standing around except for that one who's a bit mean and pushes him onto the street, because I don't know, I guess ghosts come in all different dispositions, and it's, we only hear about the bad ones because they only make horror movies about the bad ones, because that's what's scary.
It's like Ed doesn't know how dangerous American police are, and he's just way too cavalier with that cop at, buddy. Yeah. It's like, you know what, Ed, you're gonna get shot. You're gonna get shot in the face.
No, Ed's a white male.
No,
he's fine.
Ed is like the exact type of person they're not gonna shoot for no reason, which is a horrible thing to laugh about, but it's prescient.
But I just, that beginning was like, okay, you fucking people are you're too obviously in a movie right now. You're not like,
well,
you're not
that's
really
the thing.
Showing a story.
Yeah.
You're being in a movie.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like they play this line where they're like, oh, buddy, these spirits are so bad. You can't believe how bad these spirits are. They're going to kill you if they get a chance. Oh, boy, you better watch out. These spirits are going to get you. And then in the next minute, they're like, bye, Judy.
Yeah. Or it's like, they know all about spirits, but they don't know the roads around where they live. It's like, oh, we're lost. We missed our turn. It's like, how the fuck do you miss your turn? You live here.
Yeah, I mean, I liked that as an example of their relationship, like just this sort of bickering, like, oh, Ed, you're so hopeless. Like, maybe you're good at spirit finding and playing guitar real good, but oh, you're a bit hopeless in anything, but I love you anyway, you big galoot. Like, it just sort of felt like that.
Yeah.
But a weird tone for the movie.
We also already got that, and they had a mm-hmm. map, and the cop told them where to turn, and they knew the road. And they're like, yep. Oh, we're lost.
But it was Alberta forest fire season from 2016 to 2019, so it was like too smoky.
Has anybody actually ever been in fog? Like, or foggy weather? It doesn't work like that, okay? If you're in a heavily fogged area, it doesn't just, like, pool up on your feet, like...
It does if you're in a movie, Alex.
Okay, you're right. Come on, Alex. You fucking got me there.
But you're right. It's like, this movie was so foggy for the whole time, and I had to just be like, well, obviously it's, like, I guess spirit energy that Annabelle is drawing towards her, and that's what's making the fog, because... Yeah, maybe it's just straight up condensation, because spirits always make things cold. So it's just, you know, the air is condensing and freezing and looking all soupy. But yeah, it was very foggy the whole time.
I mean, so the teen party-esque movie that you're referring to, Billy, I see where you're coming from, but I feel like there mm-hmm. aren't enough humans for me to sense that, right? Since it's only Daniel and Bob that come over.
No, there's a pizza guy.
Okay, and the pizza guy.
The pizza guy.
But he didn't stay, right? He just ate one of those slices.
He just took a piece of their pizza. Enjoy that on the way over.
So,
oh, wait, before I forget, though.
Yeah.
The scene where Judy takes a bite of pizza, it cuts the TV and cuts back to her. Half the pizza's gone! Can we get some consistency? She did not eat that much pizza in, like, a second.
Like, that's the food version of not having a text chain on your phone when a new text comes up, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, it was so noticeable, I had to pause and rewind and be like, that was not that much pizza that she ate.
Yeah.
But sorry, okay, no,
she's a little kid. She's eating so much. Anyway, at least, like, okay, so not enough humans.
Well, in Superbad, at least the party was full of people, right? Like, this one, it's like, oh, okay, Daniela and Bob and some demons. I mean, not my kind of party, I guess.
Right. But, I mean, like, I guess what I'm saying is, like, replace the, like... unfamiliar element of, like, the older kids who come to the house party or the mm-hmm. football team that comes over to the nerds party and starts wrecking shit. Replace those human characters with demons, and that's kind of the transposition I'm making.
Right, yeah, okay. That makes sense.
And so Daniela kind of literally unleashes hell. She even makes a joke about it later. I guess she unleashed one demon. But what did we think about the demons who were in this movie, like all these little backdoor pilots for movies coming up in the War and Artifact cinematic universe? I could see them just being like, we'll make a Ferryman movie, you bet. Make a werewolf movie, we got it.
This just goes back to, I think, the problem I had with both the other Annabelle movies is, like, the movie's titled Annabelle, but, like, mm-hmm. Annabelle really doesn't have much to do with anything, right?
Right.
And I felt like this movie knew that the big scare is going to be the black goat horn demon thing, right? That has mm-hmm. been the villain for the whole trilogy so far. But we can't show too much of that. And then, you know, we have the little girl, but we also can't show too much of her because, you know, it's the third movie. But we also can't have Annabelle do anything new or different because for whatever reason. So in order for the movie to be carried over, we need to throw in a bunch of new shit. And that new shit mm-hmm. just didn't affect me that much because this is supposed to be an Annabelle movie and I just didn't care about, you know, the dog, like the werewolf dog or the corpse bride or the ferryman. Yeah. Like, I just didn't care too much about those other scares. And I was like, show me more of the other stuff. But they didn't want to show me more of the other stuff that was part of the title of the film, you know?
Well, yeah, it feels like they had Annabelle as the draw, you know, speaking of Annabelle being a draw, maybe she's an audience draw too, in addition to demons. And aren't audiences the real demons at the end of the day?
The true horror was us all along.
Damn it. But, like, you know, yeah, because they've already established these rules that Annabelle doesn't move on her own, she doesn't actually affect things, it's all the demons that do anything. You're right, they have to make Annabelle scary or the other demons do the scary things. But what you're saying, I think, Alex, is a little bit of like, when are we getting to the fireworks factory where they're like, check it out, it's an Annabelle movie, and you're like, okay, so what's Annabelle gonna do? And they're like, mostly just sit behind a glass, but check out these other demons.
Walk
and you're
on a
like
chair.
But I'm here for Annabelle.
But it's even not her rocking. Somebody else is doing it.
Yeah.
Like, are we just supposed to assume that this black, the black demon is just carrying her around and that's how she moves around? Like, it's just holding. Yeah. Like, why don't we see that? Why don't we see him just holding Annabelle, walking around?
Right? Just like, like a little kid holding their teddy bears. Yeah.
Like imagine, imagine if Peter Jackson's 3-hour-long epic King Kong only had King Kong for the last 10 minutes, right? That's what this movie would have kind of felt like.
And King Kong is actually inanimate, and it's some fucking like armadillo that's controlling him or something. Like
right.
That.
Yeah.
A mole, you say?
Yeah. It's so. Yeah, it's so silly. It feels just like, hey, Annabelle's what is on the poster. That's what you're going to come to it. And instead of getting Annabelle, you're going to get a bunch of other demons, which I didn't mind. I didn't actually care too much about that. But go ahead, Luke.
I think that's a great point, though, Alex. I totally hear it. And here's an attempt at a serious point about this movie. I don't know if I can make it all the way through, but I'll try. I've made this point several other times in other films, but I guess it's the movies keep making me make it, so... The real storytelling problem with these kind of films is that the demons themselves often don't have any limiting principles. So there's no way to gauge what their abilities are or aren't, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're strong enough to close doors or knock you over, but then sometimes they're only strong enough to roll a coin at you. So there's no way to like know what they're going to do or even how to beat them. And I would contrast that a little bit to when we did Sinister. Mr. Boogie at least had some limiting principles of, like, he needed images, right? It had to be pictures or movies. Like, if you consider the grand scheme of what exists in the world, that's actually a very small amount of things that he can haunt through.
Right.
And he had a goal, which was, like, stealing children. Now, you can ask, well, why does he need children? And then you get into the drain pipe, but this one there isn't even that first level of like motivation to
wants a soul, right?
Yeah, I guess, but I mean, I don't know, like, okay, so
did you already get a soul the last movie?
Yeah,
and the movie before that.
And so because there's no talk about what would limit these demons, like what is effective and what isn't, in a way that a movie like Sinister has those limitations on its antagonist, it's so much harder to care. So much harder to care about what the demons are doing, because they can just do whatever they need to or not, right? It's all so, again, contrived by the plot. It's such a movie thing, not a story thing.
Right. I think that does hamper the effectiveness of a demon as well, but it also, like, if you think about it rationally, you're like, I can't predict what this thing is going to do, so I don't really know how to be afraid of it. And that kind of makes it, like, instead of making it even more scary and undefinable, the demon, or like the shark in Jaws, like, that's an animal that's hunting, and that sucks, but there's no reasoning with it. But I guess you know how it'd be like if a shark could suddenly, like, appear on land for no reason. You'd be like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Sharks don't be on land. Yeah. Jossam.
But I think that's the real hope. That's why Sharknado is such an innovative take on the shark genre.
There you go. Fair enough. Yeah. So, well, what can a demon do? I don't know. It can do spooky things that make audiences have jump scares. And yeah, that makes it less imperiling for the movie.
But our heroes can stop them at certain times for extra tension in the movie.
They can. They can at act breaks before the big climax of a movie. And of course, by the end, they can stop them until the next movie. But to circle back to the ferryman in specific, of all the demons that were in this movie, I think the ferryman was the one that was my favorite, even though I didn't really care too much about them. And it was because the jump scares around the ferryman were just those coins falling and dropping and rolling and, you know, then like appearing behind Mary Ellen in a very spooky way. And the thing that really made me appreciate it was the jump scare came from like just the sound of a coin hitting the floor instead of a giant musical sting, like of violins. And so it wasn't like a jump scare that's also very startling and loud, because they let the ambience make the jump scare. And I really appreciated that, because I'm getting a little bit tired of like the like zing of a violin, you know, going to
the sound drops out and then you hear like a
You're like, okay, I'm gonna get scared. Oh, big musical note where you played every key on your keyboard at the same time, and now you're scared. Like, this seems like it's silly to say about this movie, but it felt like a subtler type of jump scare, and I appreciated that.
Yeah, I think like my favorite scene and the coolest scene is when she first sees. I think the first time she sees the ferryman, and mm-hmm. she finds the flashlight, and you just see like the silhouette in the closet with like the two coins, and then she slowly like. Shines the light up, and then the coins just drop. Yeah, that was like by far the best scene in the movie. Very cool, very atmospheric, mm-hmm. and I liked it.
But also, that ferryman is not doing the ferryman's job. Like the Greek myth of ferryman is supposed to take dead souls across the river with their coins. Not supposed to get live souls. No, he's not after live souls. That's not his job. That's someone else's job. Like, what are you doing, the ferryman? Stay in your lane. Stay in your boat. Wait till the dead people come to you, then take them across,
Chiron?
Or throw them in the river. Yeah,
Chiron.
Charon. Yeah, Charon or Charon or something.
Over the river Styx.
Yeah.
Hey, come sail away. You know that song's about aliens.
I believe you. As long as you have no follow up questions, yes, I understand what you mean.
Well, I actually just recently like actually listened to the lyrics of that song. It's like, oh, this is about aliens.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very cool. No aliens in this movie, though. Unless maybe there were.
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe the Warrens deal with aliens, too?
Yeah, why were they leaving for, like, a day and a night anyway? Like, were they at an alien conference?
I assume they had some sort of a haunt to go solve.
Mm.
Ooh, that actually brings me to... That actually is a good segue for a question I had while I was watching this movie, which is the whole reason Daniela goes to this house, because... I want to go talk to my dad, who she lost her dad in a tragic accident and blames herself and is like, wants to, I guess, atone or make amends or whatever. So she goes over because she knows the Warrens are like these spooky people. But what do people know about the Warrens at this point, do we think? Like, did Daniela not know that the house was full of demonic things or... You know, and that's why she didn't take it seriously, or like, so I was like, what does like average person know about Ed and Lorraine Warren at this time in this movie universe?
Enough to bully Judy.
The average person thinks they're kooks?
I guess so.
Yeah, the sociology of this is kind of inscrutable. Were I alive and to hear that there were these demonologists, I would be skeptical. And mm-hmm. I'm not someone who's particularly left to my own devices, thinking of supernatural things as influencing mm-hmm. events. So right. I'm like a more mild, but I think related examples. I'm always a little bit taken off guard when someone asks like what my astrological sign is, for example, or like.
What is your astrological sign?
That they're going to Aquarius.
We're all Aquarius.
That's right. Ah, okay, sorry.
or like, oh, I got my tarot cards read, this kind of thing. Like, it's not even, mm-hmm. I don't even feel judgmental about that anymore, although I think I probably did when I was younger. But it's more just kind of like outside of my purview of what would occur to me to think about the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, were
That's
I...
such an Aquarius thing to say.
I know. Were I to think about the Warrens as myself, if I were a member of society and I knew about this family, I would just think like, well, there's another kind of thing that people believe that, I mean, I don't know. To me, it's like no different than reading about like Mormonism or like, a cult of some sort. It's like, oh yeah, people believe weird shit because we're all in this like puddle of life that we don't really have any final answers for, and it kind of is hard, so I get it.
Yeah. We're just all trying to do as much as we can while we're here. Yeah. Yeah, fair. Okay.
But kids are bullies because, you know, people make fun of what they don't understand.
Like, yeah, kids, and if Judy is different enough to be ostracized safely, I guess, by, like, her peers.
Like, I got teased as a kid because I was homeschooled. Like, it can be as something as simple as, mm-hmm. I don't get that, I don't do that, therefore I will make fun of it.
Right.
You know.
You were homeschooled? No, I'm kidding.
Can't you tell?
Alex. I guess, like, if you were at a guest of the Warrens, would any part of you be compelled to, like, I don't know, disregard their rules about their,
no!
their stuff.
No, no. And that's my problem with this movie. Daniela is not a normal human. No normal human does that.
That's because that's like courtesy and manners, not fear,
yeah.
per se, right?
Right, okay. Because there's nothing to fear.
Yeah.
Daniela could have used a good Ooh. Father figure. Jesus.
Although, you know what? There is a psychological category that the psychologist Paul Bloom and others have talked about called aleph, where you don't believe something is bad, but you still act like it is because there's like an evolved sense to avoid things that previously were dangerous to you. So like, even though I don't believe that Annabelle is haunted, were I in the Warren's house, I might leave she is and just leave her alone.
Just leave her alone. You know, you've mentioned Paul Bloom's like concept of a leaf enough times that it's almost ready to show up, I think, on the Nothing to Fear bingo card.
Oh yeah.
As Luke talks about a leaf.
I find it to be an extremely revelatory psychological concept for why people behave in ways that they know are not rational, but it's because there's like a survival instinct that's pre-rational, and you know, our DNA is what it is with those like lingering atavisms of our ancestors, that kind of thing. And shit is so interesting because it's like,
it's very cool.
How does the modern world strike us so differently based on our evolved nature, you know? Nerdy.
Very true.
Nerd alert.
Nerd. I guess sort of final thing that I appreciated about this movie, and they gave no explanation for it at all, except for, I guess, Bob eventually did explain it, but the whole, like, the fact that the entire town knows that this guy who works at the grocery store's nickname is Bob's Got Balls. Just, I don't know why.
I also loved that was, like, a scandalous nickname.
Yeah. I also didn't buy his explanation. He was like, "Oh, I work with the basketball team, and if they need balls, they say, hey, Bob, get us some balls." I was like,
"Bob's got a huge dick. That's what we know."
Yeah, of course.
No, but the fact that I bet like Bob worked at like a chocolate factory, and one day he tried to dip his balls in like some chocolate or something. Like it had to be something like gross.
Call the dog over.
Yeah.
Did you use peanut butter? You don't want to get the dog sick.
Yeah, come on. But just the fact that, like, even Ed said it, like, even Ed, who's this, like, weird, spooky guy who gets lost and doesn't know anything, he knows about this nickname at the end, is just like, what?
Bob's got courage.
Bob's got courage. Bob's got courage, and Bob also has, I think for me,
an expendable guitar.
Expendable guitar, and he's got the best line of the entire movie, where he comes in the house, and they're like, Bob, are you okay? And he's just like, no, there's a werewolf outside. It's like... I appreciate you, Bob.
Of course. Yeah, that would suck.
What a shitty day. You just want to come over and flirt with this girl you have a crush on, and then you're hiding in a car from a werewolf, and you lost your favorite guitar. Not a great day for him.
Pop culture tangent. Speaking of werewolves, that makes me think of Lupin. And I recently watched The Big Lebowski again, and it turns out, I never knew this, but David Thewlis is in The Big Lebowski. He is the annoying friend of Maude that is always laughing when the dude is at her apartment.
He is David Thewlis.
Yeah, and
yeah,
so I was like, who is this guy? Well, he's, you know, Knox. Anyway, sorry. I just never put that together until I saw it this time.
Again, I thought that was going to be a setup to a nothing to something.
Well, see, I'm particularly unreflective on this movie, so there's nothing to mirror.
There we go.
But to Alex's point about Annabelle, though, there's a number of scenes where it's, like, reflected in the glass. We see Annabelle's face, or in the mirror, it's Annabelle's face. But she never does anything. She never moves her face. So,
no.
At this point, I'm like, why are we even looking at this doll? Show me the real problems, not her.
Yeah. Yeah, she's not the disease, she's a symptom.
Yeah.
And so it's like, why are we treating the symptom?
So yes, she's got, the makeup is great. Her clothes are dirty. Her face is dirty. She's creepy looking. We get it, movie. We fucking get it. I got it like within 5 minutes of the first movie. She doesn't move. Her head doesn't turn. She's not possessed. She's a conduit. We get it.
We get it.
Yeah. So when they make Annabelle 4, the real twist is when Annabelle actually like just starts moving, being alive, holding a knife and stabbing people, right?
Yeah. She was Chucky the whole time.
That's what Megan is going to be, that movie that's coming out in January. Mithrigan. It's going to be... Actually, we made an Annabelle, but it's an AI.
The android thingy?
Oh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I don't know about this movie. There's a new AI movie coming out?
Yes, it's called Megan, but the E is a 3, so Mithrigan. And she is like... I saw the trailer.
It's a robotics like, thing, like she was made.
I'm a... Yeah. I'm your friend. Protect my daughter. And she's like, I'll protect my daughter. And then the mom is like, oh, make sure you eat your veggies. And then the doll is like, she doesn't have to eat her veggies if you want. And then it's like, uh-oh, this protector doll is kind of going haywire. It's weird. But James Wan is behind it. He's got a hand in it. So, I don't know. Probably some malignant nonsense going on. Luke's.
Yeah, there was actually Annabelle inside Mithrigan the whole time.
There's a scene where she like falls and breaks her face and the eye falls away and it's just the Annabelle eye. And yeah. It's like, oh no! a fucking surprise Annabelle movie like that? Oh man. That'd be great.
The crossover we didn't know we needed.
Yeah, when Wakanda Forever comes out in a couple weeks... takes off the mask, it's actually just Annabelle in there.
No, I'm thinking all of it now. Malignant, the Malignant 2, the back of the skull opens up, and instead of whatever Gabriel on the back, it's Annabelle just, you know, in The Shining, chopping through the door. Here's Johnny, but it's just Annabelle's weird face.
Annabelle be Annabelling.
Annabelle be Annabelling. She's an Annaballer.
I think a deep dive into the Nothing to Fear podography would note that there is a heavy correlation between how much we enjoyed the movie or not versus how much we actually talk about it versus other things.
I don't like how you just use the words podography.
Podography. Yeah.
Well, what would it be? It's not a discography.
Catalog? Yeah.
Yeah.
Catalog. Yeah, okay, but you could like catalog is generic to any media file, right?
Okay, whereas, fine, we can be a
whereas
podography.
This, like a discography is music, a bibliography would be book related, a podography would be podcast related, right?
Which podcast do you think is going to be the first to get like a Criterion Collection podography edition? It also sounds like you're saying pornography with a stuffed nose.
Yes.
Like, that's the thing.
Well, for me, the first podcast I started listening to is called The Partially Examined Life, which is a philosophy podcast that started in like 2009, I think. But I started listening in like 2011. So for me, it'd probably be that one. But in terms of actual podcasts, I don't know. I'd have to think about that one a little bit.
Monday morning podcast.
Monday morning podcast. All right, if we can return to this podcast, this podography entry for a few more minutes anyway before we wrap it up.
I watch just podography every day.
As we... Luke.
Don't you say you listen to it?
As we are recording, this will come out after Annabelle comes home and working through the edit of the episode. Alex, you have a speculation on that episode where it's like maybe the demon just wants like a suburban life and just wants to like get on Earth and like chill and like and be just like a demon. And so what I can only assume will result in a flurry of emails from our listeners, you know, asking, well, what do you think the demon's motivations are? I think like this situation where the demon is in a home and it has like access to stuff. This is as close as he's getting to like
nice
that
home.
Suburban.
They have nice home.
Yeah, suburban tract house, big yard.
The American dream.
You know, chickens, chickens to eat every now and again. Perfect.
Demons just want the American dream.
Doesn't everybody?
Wait till they learn about mortgages.
And the housing crash in 2008 or whenever it is. Yeah. So. Okay. And then at the end, everybody gets to come to Judy's birthday party because, god damn it, that kid deserves, that's the bare minimum that kid deserves. So, I don't know. I thought it was hacky and tacked on, and like having the bully apologize to her was a bit of like an after school special where it's like, hey, I'm sorry I made fun of you. I was just mad about my dad. And it's just like, oh, they all learn to get over their differences and communicate. It's, That ending could have been from why am I blanking on that stupid thing we had to teach when we worked with the kids? With all
second
the singing.
Step.
Second step.
Second step. Yeah, second
Stop.
Step.
How could you forget second step?
And calm down. Stop. Name your They're not playing real instruments, Luke. Those are that's a fake instrument. You're right.
Second right. step. Love it. Love it. Love it. Yeah. So that ending was hokey and cheesy, and you know, Annabelle's contained forever until she's not. So
I'm having the none of that.
That's what? That's the only other one we haven't dipped our toes into?
The other one, there's a law.
The nun? Oh, the curse of La Llorona?
Sharona?
The curse of My Sharona.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Hey, fucking, if that song was in that movie, I'll watch it.
That's a good song. All right, Luke, I hesitate to ask you this, but do you have final thoughts about this movie?
I mean, this movie exists because previous movies in this franchise have been successful and studios want a cash grab, and everything about the movie makes it seem that way. That doesn't mean it's without merit. The acting is pretty good for a horror movie, I would say. The sets look cool. The sound design, like every horror movie that has money behind it, is really good. The creaks are creepy. So, like, the technical parts of this film and the cinematic parts are good. There's no... Mm-hmm. There was no, like, visual or editing problems with this movie, other than maybe the pizza eating of Judy. So there's, like, you know... Inferior movies have continuity issues, even in just the visuals, and this movie has none of that kind of stuff because it has all that money behind mm-hmm. it. And I think James Wan is also like credited as a writer or a producer of this, and he's a very talented filmmaker. So all of that is fine. I wasn't annoyed with the visuals. It's just I'm just fatigued with this kind of movie, mm-hmm. and. It's not even this movie's fault. I don't blame it. I don't blame any of the Annabelle movies for that. It's just, these are money-making movies. These aren't shooting stars of new forms of art, you know?
Right.
And
fair
maybe,
enough.
Maybe I'm asking for too much for shooting stars of art in the horror genre, but I mentioned to you off air, I just did my top five films top five horror films of the 21st century with other Alex for Full Spectrum Cinema. All five of those movies that I named, I could just easily talk about for a couple hours
mm-hmm.
of all of the cool, unique, like scene by scene, you could go through and really dig deep. There's so much meat on the bone of those ones. So it makes movies like this, which have relatively little meat on the bone, stand out to me more, you know? So that's a long-winded way of saying what everyone already knows.
We definitely tucked into more of the side dishes of these movies than the actual meat because there wasn't a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. It's very much like this is a horror movie that's going to make some money, and it's a great way for the horror genre to still be around. And maybe this is somebody's first horror movie, and maybe if it's a first horror movie somebody ever sees, maybe it's really scary, but we're old and jaded, and you know, it takes a lot more to get us that high that we're seeking. But yeah, Alex, final thoughts?
I mean, this is like as if someone took some tracing paper over the Sistine Chapel and they'd be like, look what I drew. I'm like, yeah, but you traced it, you know? Like, it's not bad. It's just, it's every single horror movie we've ever watched before. It was so predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing about it was... You know how you get like a joy or excitement when you see something new for the first time that you really like, or you hear a new song that you're like, oh, I'm going to put that on repeat? Nothing about this movie gave me that kind of excitement about rewatchability or rethinkability. It was just like, okay. Yeah.
Hmm. Fair enough. My final thought is I actually thought there did a couple good fake out jump scares pretty well in this movie where, you know, you're expecting everything to be a scare. And there was a couple times where I was like, okay, here's a very obvious jump scare. And then it wasn't. And the two that I'm thinking of was like when Lorraine is in the car while Ed is outside looking under the trunk and she's holding up the map and she holds it up to completely cover the driver's side window and the camera like pushes in very slowly. And then she like pulls it down and you're expecting to be like a scary face behind it. It's just nothing. I was just like, okay, nice one, movie. I got it. And then the other one is when they're playing Feely Mealy for the first time. Or no, when it's the second time. Like, we've got the setup of the game Feely Mealy, which, by the way, sounds horrible. Like, reach your hand into this box and grab something out. Okay. I don't know if it's a real game or not, but I can see why it is no longer a game.
By Milton Bradley.
Indeed was. But the scene where she has to get the key and the ghosts are like, oh, you need the key? Well, it's in this in this box of like objects, and Judy reaches in, and you're expecting a hand to reach out and grab her, and then it just turns out she's just like, nope, I got the keys, okay, bye. And you're just like, ah, I thought I was gonna be scared there, but it wasn't. So I think that, yes, it's very by the numbers, it's very Hollywood, it's very like A to B storytelling, but it feels like they at least were self-aware enough to put in some of those like red herrings just to keep it a little bit more invigorating for an audience. And I don't know, I appreciated that. So I definitely have warmth for this movie. Not that I'd say I'd watch it again, but I am glad that I have. It's a rare occasion where we can close off a horror franchise, at least for the time being. And, you know, it feels good. Feels like we did it. Until in the next, you know, in 1 month, we get the sixth Scream movie and the fourth Annabelle movie, and then we get to do it for this podcast. But yeah, okay. So do we have scariest parts? Yes. Good question, Billy. I have a scariest part. For the whole scene where Mary Ellen is like dealing with the ferryman, where like the eyes keep appearing behind her and it's really dark and foggy and there's all these like coins dropping. I thought that had the most tension for me in the movie, and I enjoyed that part the most in terms of scares, because it was creepy. The ferryman, I think, looked kind of cool as a figure, and I've made the joke about the Warren Artifact cinematic universe, but if they did make a ferryman movie, I'd be interested to see a whole movie about that particular spirit. I think there could be some good meat on that particular bone. So that's what I'm picking. Alex, your scariest part of the movie, please.
So I originally had a scariest part of the movie, but then it wasn't scary because I paused it at the exact right time to like go get a drink or something. So that was like when Judy gets like woken up, and then she looks under her cover, there's Annabelle, and then like behind Annabelle, yep, you see like the human Annabelle.
Oh yeah.
I paused the movie that exact first like shot that you see the kid Annabelle, and I'm like, oh, I guess there's a scare coming up when I cut back. So that probably would have been my scariest part, just because like as a kid, you, like under the covers, you're supposed to be safe. And that's fucked
blankets
up.
Blankets are safety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking Paul from Hell House learned his lesson there, didn't he?
Right?
That's true.
So my other scariest part of the movie that I didn't pause in was probably when all the hands start coming out of the feely-meely game.
Yeah, so gross.
That was really, I was just like, ugh. And then like, I thought like when they first grabbed Judy's ankle, I thought her ankle broke. I heard like a snapping noise. I'm like,
yeah,
that was very visceral, but she seemed okay. But
she was fine.
Yeah.
Maybe she had the healing power of a slice of pizza that healed her bone very quick.
Yeah.
Luke, your scariest part.
To me, like all the scares in this movie are interchangeable, so it's hard to pick one over any other. So in terms of scary, so I'll give my most interesting or innovative scare of the film, which was when Judy's like spinning light thing gets knocked over and is on the
wall. Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that one.
And
yeah,
you
yeah.
see like one color, it's a kid, and then it's like older and then older, and then the last one is the bride with the knife. I thought that was kind of
cool. I thought that was actually adult Annabelle.
It went doll sitting up, child Annabelle, adult Annabelle with a knife, black demon. Like that was the last one.
Oh, it
was
the
big,
because
he had the big had the big horns, okay. And
well, it was like the adult Annabelle.
Obviously,
when she
it didn't
was in
make
a
that
cult
a big impact on me. but visually, it was pretty cool to see the color. It reminded me of in Insidious when Tucker is like looking through the rotoscope with the different colors, and all of a sudden there's a kid there. Whoa, you know, like that was kind of cool. So I'm gonna say that.
Yeah. Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was a really cool scene. And just even though it was telegraphed so well, like she has that in the first scene, we see it spinning around. It's like, well, that's going to come back and be a scare later.
Fucking... And of course, these movies always do this. Like, the thing that has color is actually like illuminates the whole house. like the lights in Malignant and Dead Silence light the whole hotel up with
everything.
It's like, how the fuck did this happen? You must have those lights went to the fog school of getting around people.
Also, how do you sleep? How do you sleep with that? It seems so distracting. Just like I have my eyes closed, and then like just flash of red, flash of yellow, flash of blue. Like
if real life was like these movies, like the streetlight downtown would illuminate my whole yard.
Of course. Yeah. just a spotlight. Yeah, Kelly was saying that that scene with the four different colors lights, it was proof that it wasn't just a James Wan movie, because otherwise it would have just been red the whole time. It's like, no, James, you need to have other colors in your movie. He's like, fine, okay, but I'm doing a Malignant later. Yeah. It's gonna be so red, you'll see.
Red on, bud.
All right, so time to rate it. I'll pick this one. And I'm going to pick the ratings as coming soon from the War and Artifact Cinematic Universe, or the WACU. So.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
So, yes, it was a silly movie. It was by the numbers. It won't move the meter on innovation in horror at all, but I don't think it will roll the meter back. And so I think for that reason, this movie is going to get a solid 3 out of 5. Movies from the WACU coming soon.
Nice.
Alex.
Yeah, there's like nothing inherently wrong about this movie, but nothing super great. I sat for the whole movie. I didn't be like, that was fucking dumb. It was a very inoffensive horror movie, you know? It didn't try to do anything new, but it played it super safe. But it
also didn't do anything new.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to give it 2.5 WACUs to a theater near you.
Yep. The suit of samurai armor coming 2032. You'll see.
Yeah. I don't know. I whatever I gave Annabelle Creation, I'm going to give this movie. Was it 2? Was it 2.5? I don't remember. I think it was 2.
I don't know. There's someone working on a spreadsheet, though.
Yeah, that's true.
I do know that is true.
So, yeah. I mean, I'll either give it 2 WACUs or however many WACUs I gave Annabelle Creation. It's like, to me, this is the same movie.
Okay. Right. Whatever it was. 2 or whatever I gave last week.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Awesome. Okay, well, let's cheer something. And I can't just cheer talking with you guys, even though it is one of the highlights of my Sunday. But yesterday, Kelly and I did a kind of fun thing, spontaneous. We decided to go for a drive. And
in this economy? Just for a drive? Okay. Yeah, okay, money bags.
Hey. Patreon.com/nothingtofear. We went for a drive, as a morning drive, and checked out the very eastern end of the island of Montreal. And it was pretty cool because it's where the St. Lawrence River and the River De Prairies, it's like the Prairies River, join. And so we went to the end and put a hand in each river, and it was like one river tour, which is very cool. So it was very nice, very lovely fall day, kind of cute little park. And yeah, it was just nice to go see a part of the island I hadn't been on. So that's what I'm cheering.
One can never put their hand in the same river twice. Hey, Billy.
Nope, but you can, put your hand in two rivers different rivers one time. Yeah.
Take that, Heraclitus.
Yeah.
You're not as good a philosopher as you think, dead Greek guy.
What have you done lately, Heraclitus? Get out of here. You never had a podcast, did you, nerd?
Oh, that's so good.
All right. Luke, what are you cheering?
So, last week, I cheered going to Calgary and seeing friends, which was definitely the highlight. But a very close second was that while I was there, I picked up for purchase a new Fender Telecaster electric guitar.
Ooh, hell yeah.
From Chip, my future brother-in-law. And it's so nice. And I've been playing it. I have a good amp. And I got a distortion pedal from him, too. And I'm re-remembering why I love guitar so much by hearing distortion, and it's a pretty nice, it's by far the nicest guitar I've ever owned.
Hell yeah.
And to have a nice guitar and a nice amp, you feel the notes in your bones and in your soul, and I feel bad for Ranger. He's been not loving it as much. He's got to go upstairs when I play. But
aww. Does he sing along? Is he a sing-along dog, or he just doesn't like the sound?
He's just like, what is happening? So I'm cheering my 2011 Rosewood maple fretboard American-made Telecaster.
American-made? Damn.
It's nice.
Hell
it's
yeah. Really nice.
Nice. And I played at the open mic night last week with it, and I played Bush and Harvey Danger, and it just sounded so.
Ooh, hell yeah. I trust that Ranger's, you know, reaction to your song is not an indictment of your skill.
Well, I mean, hopefully. It could be. I always say, when people ask me if I'm a musician, I say, no, I'm a performer who plays guitar.
Very nice. Oh, good cheer. That's great. I'd love to see a picture of that guitar because it sounds pretty.
Yeah, I'll send one in the chat.
Sweet. All right. Alex Wan, what are you cheering?
I mean, this has been a fucking terrible week. I've pretty much been at home since, I've been at home since Tuesday, mostly in bed and like getting out every hour to go do my business.
Not great.
Yeah.
Not great.
Not great. But like, I'm actually feeling very, very much better. So that's my cheer, is like, as shitty as the week has been, I'm feeling better, and hopefully literally. I'll have a more productive week this week.
Yes, hopefully you are feeling better next week.
Health is like no fun, the basically. Number one example of green light syndrome. That's like, I think psychologists talk about, where it's like green lights are normal and red lights are bad. So in that schema, there's no positive. It's either neutral or bad. So you're set up for failure, right? Health is not good. It's normal. And when you don't have it, you realize that it's not neutral. It's actually positive.
Yeah. Right.
So being able to reflect on the things that you think are neutral or normal, but are actually positive, I think is a really mentally healthy thing to do.
Of course. It's a great one. For more philosophy tips, follow Luke.
Or tips.
Or tips. Right.
The legend of Luke.
The legend of Luke.
Look out, Forrest. Here I come.
Oh, man. Now I got to leave all that dumb Redwall shit in the episode.
You knew you would. You knew it would come back.
I knew it would come back. All right, that's going to end us for another week. We have one more entry into Creepy Doll Month, and without an Annabelle, what is Luke going to do? We'll find out in a little bit, but first we got to pay some bills, so thank you to everybody who listens to the show. It is so wonderful to, you know, just sort of see who's listening every week. We are a small podcast, but we are mighty, and we have some of the greatest listeners, and I really appreciate people who, like, send an email to the podcast. You could do that, nothingtofearpodcast@gmail.com, or send us a DM. It's really great. And if you would like to support the show, an easy way to do that is leave a rating on your podcast reviewer of choice. A little 5-star rating, a little sentence, helps us move up the charts. It's been a while since we had one, but you know what? We're still trucking along. I'm grateful for the listeners we do have. You know, of course, having some more would be fun, but maybe the I friends that are here, you're great.
Do you want me to leave a review for the podcast, Billy?
You always
stop watching shitty movies.
I only pick movies one or two times a month. It's not my fault all the time anymore.
Maybe my joke could be, I'll give a 5-star rating and just a trashy review.
How dare you? Hey, the 5 stars is what counts. But also, yeah, follow us on social media, Nothing to Fear Podcast on Instagram, NTFPod on Twitter. I'm at DesignBilly on both of those platforms. We do have a Patreon account now at patreon.com/nothingtofear. For as little as a dollar, you can get some stuff. And this will be a revelation to both of you, but those stickers that I sent you, those are going to be a reward. If you follow the Patreon, if you consistently give to the Patreon for 1 year, I'll send you a sticker. So I will have been in touch with you by now. If you're on the Patreon for a year, we got a sticker for you. It's a cool design. It'll be up on there. If you want to see what that is, check it out. patreon.com/nothingtofear. Yeah. And more to come. We have some stuff coming up.
How strict are you going to be on Alex and I using the card? Like, if we accidentally use it on the same date, is that like they're both burnt? So Alex and I have to plan to not use them on the same one.
Yeah, it's one only. Okay. You don't get out of jail free. You don't get someone else out of jail with that card.
Alex, monopoly. Do you want to do first one or the next one after the first one?
We'll talk. We'll talk.
Okay.
Give me enough notice and I'll find a guest to come over to come on the show and talk about it. The next one is in January, just so you know, for your plans.
I know.
It's closest to my birthday, so maybe I'll use it.
Yeah. We'll talk about it. Yes, it's a fun Get Out of Friday the 13th free card designed by Kelly, based on our mixed relationship with the Friday the 13th universe.
Wow, that is such a mix. That is such a diplomatic way to put it, Billy.
That's like the most generous thing you've said all year.
Are you running for office? Flip-flopper.
Listen, I'm committed to doing it. I'm committed. I'm not using one of those cards. I'm in for the long haul with those movies. Anyway, yes, patreon.com/nothingfair. Help us out. Leave us a rating. Send us a message. Say hi. We love it when people say hi. And you can also check out Luke on his various pod platforms, including a Patreon bonus episode that he and other Alex have done and we've released by now. But where can people find you?
Really True Fiction or The Liberal Soul? And actually, I mean, it'll be old news by the time anyone hears this, but this week I actually put out a new episode on both. First new episode in a while, because in Calgary, I recorded for The Liberal Soul with my friends Justin and Matt, and we did our top 5 video game list. So that is up and could be of interest to perhaps some of my co-hosts here or other nerds in the world. And I did my first in-person recording with David in like 2 years. Almost 2 years. And we did Franz Kafka's The Trial, which is just a really incredible novella. And I think is one that...
What's the difference between a novel and a novella?
Size. Length.
Okay.
It's like 150 pages. I think it's totally arbitrary, but I'd say unless a book is 200 pages, it's not a novel. And it's like normal sized font, not like huge, and then 200
times
pages.
New Roman, size 12 font,
yeah,
1-inch you know. Margins, double spaced.
But The Trial, like I don't usually say that people who listen to Really True Fiction need to know the source material, but The Trial I think is just such an important work in understanding, like, hard to describe unfreedom in systems that just totally overwhelm you. And Kafka just had a way of unwinding that psychology so well that I would recommend The Trial to anyone.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Cool. And that's awesome. So check those out wherever you get the podcasts. There's always links in the show notes. And you can also see what Alex is getting up to over on.
You can follow me on Instagram, Juan Song A Day, all one word. One W-A-N, and I'll post a song there every day, and there's a Spotify playlist you can follow.
Sounds awesome. Check that out, and come back next week as we finish off Doll Month. Luke, take us home.
Well, I want the two of you to know that I'm so butthurt about 3 Annabelle movies that all I want to do is pick Saw 3. Like, I just want to punish.
Do it, you won't.
I just want to punish this podcast for... But
rude.
I still respect you too much. I can't. It's basically like it's
coward.
It'd be like offending your.
So
human.
Do it. Saw 4.
It'd be like there's like a human rights violation if I pick that for you too. You know.
Okay.
So I looked, and all of the doll movies left are either like super shitty looking ones from the 70s or 80s, any of the Child's Play franchise, or like the Saw movies or The Boy. So we have to pick The Boy, and we always knew it was going to be this one. So we're going to watch The Boy, and I imagine it will
be excited for it.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, like, it's a movie that I think we should cover, and it's got, what's her name? Lauren Cohen, I think is her name.
Yeah, got Maggie from The Walking Dead in
she's
it.
She's pretty great, so we're going to watch The Boy.
The Boy.
All right. The Boy, not The Boys, the show on Amazon Prime. Don't watch that. But we could talk about that.
All right.
I'll watch whatever I fucking want to watch, Billy.
Fine. All right. Well, then we'll watch The Boy, and we'll be back next week. And remember, folks, they're just movies. Nothing to fear.